Hey, everybody. Welcome to the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host, Nick Sands. Today, I'm super excited because just like every child, I was obsessed with monster trucks, and I have a real-life monster truck racing team on the podcast today. Rick and Eric Swanson from Obsession Racing. How are you guys?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
How's it going? I'm doing awesome right now. So just kind of for everybody who may not know, you guys are like a real legit Monster Jam, monster truck racing team, right?
Yeah, we'd both beat Gravedigger if that's what you're asking.
Hell yeah! Unlike most people in New Hampshire, I'm not a fan of Gravedigger. I prefer Bigfoot.
Old school.
We beat him too, so it's okay.
Actually,
well, I love you guys too.
Fun fact is Eric drove Bigfoot at Costa Mesa for one weekend.
I literally don't know what I would do if I got to drive Bigfoot. I would probably die. I'm not gonna lie. Like, you can't see it right now, but I'm actually like blushing with excitement. That would be like the absolute pinnacle of my life if I could sit in Bigfoot, I would probably cry.
Well, if you were out on the West Coast, we'd put you in a better truck, but that's neither here nor there.
But enough about Bigfoot. Who is that guy? Let's talk about Obsession Racing. So,
well, we were Bigfoot for a weekend.
So you guys are, how long have you guys been monster trucking for?
I've been involved in the industry for about 28 years. I've been driving for 25. And Eric?
I think it's 9 years?
Ten,
somewhere around there.
It's hard to keep track, isn't it? Us young guys. Guys are counting us, are counting up, and the older guys like my dad and you are counting down.
True.
And so I guess the real question to start off would be for Rick is how did you get into this? Because you must have gone into this right as monster trucking was kind of like becoming what it is.
I ain't that old. Easy.
I mean, 30 years ago is a long time to have gotten into. As far as I know, at least my understanding of the history of monster trucks is 30 years ago is not that far away from the beginning.
I started in the industry right when the nitrogen shock started for the trucks.
Okay.
Leaf springs were out. There was still a few trucks that had leaf springs when I started, but the majority of the trucks had gone to four link with either a coilover or a nitrogen shock, which isn't much different than what we use today. Same theory, just we understand them a whole lot better and can make them work a whole lot better than when I started.
And what was that? What was it about? I mean, like, how did you even get started in it? Like, do you just buy a truck and start beefing it up, or do you start with a truck? How does it normally work?
Well, when I was 16, I bought a 1970 Ford Bronco bone stock from my grandparents for $1,800. By the time I was done with that truck, it was in 180 magazines worldwide. With that recognition, I started building Ford trucks for the SEMA show. And as it grew, you know, people that were providing product and whatnot kept asking, what's next? What's next? Well, I wasn't sure. And all of a sudden I said, I think I want to do this. And it was going to be, I had a full-time job. This was going to be something I just did on the side. A year after I finished the truck, I quit my full-time job and went straight to doing that.
What was your full-time job before?
I was actually a manager of a printed circuit board shop.
Wow. That does not sound like it could be any more the opposite of being a monster truck driver.
Well, it's way different field by far. When I was a lot younger, My dad was diagnosed with two brain tumors and a lung tumor. He had a printed circuit board shop. My grandfather had a metal shop that, and when I say metal shop, most people think sheet metal. He had brakes that would bend quarter plate 12 feet long, 90 degrees.
I mean,
it was big, heavy-duty stuff. They actually, before computers, my grandfather and my dad designed, basically an air computer, for lack of a better word. So they would go into mining places, cement plants, sand and gravel plants, and connect their computer, which was all air activated, all worked on air. Basically, it would run the whole plant, and it would connect to all the conveyor belts and whatnot. And if something went wrong, it would shut everything off so it didn't overload wherever it was broken and whatnot. So basically, it was what a computer does today. They had to use all air switches back then.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's why they had such a big big equipment, because everything was made out of half inch and quarter plate and, you know, that kind of stuff. So as they updated and updated and updated, they had to buy a circuit board shop. So my dad bought the circuit board shop. Then so he supplied all the circuit board shops. I worked at both places. Then when I left, because you can only work with family so long and you have to go out and try on your own. And that's something I always keep in mind since I work with my son. Well, I work with my son and my wife. it's something you have to keep in mind, and you have to remember that because you're family, a lot of things get taken advantage of. A lot of things are expected more of you.
You don't get paid as much.
So at the time I was young, I went out on my own. I was building the trucks for Ford during this time when my dad got diagnosed with the cancer. I actually took my dad to SEMA, took him to Dixie Peck's private party, Ford's private party, and all these different places. He actually, I introduced him to Bob Chandler with Bigfoot. We came back. Month after we came back, he offered me a full-time job back at the place, and I said, I'm not coming back to work in the shop. He said, no, I want you to work in the office. He goes, I want you to run it. And so I started running it. Because when he was out with cancer, the people that were running it put it in the hole pretty bad. And with two brain surgeries, he had to learn how to talk and everything again. So he saw how I interacted with the people at SEMA, and he wanted me to interact with his customers so I could deal with all that, because he was still slurring words and just having a little, you know, he was still on the recovery plan. One thing led to another. We built the business up. It took us 5 years to build the business up, and once it was built up, we sold it. I went my way, and you know, he obviously retired, and then the monster trucks took off from there.
That's interesting that your grandfather and your father are both, you know, for lack of a better word, inventors, I mean, tinkerers, because it doesn't sound, when you put it like that, it doesn't sound like it's really that far off from what you do.
No, I tell everybody all the time, if I could know half as much as what my father did, I'd consider myself a smart person.
I feel the same way about my dad. I'm sure that Eric does too.
Sometimes.
So you left your family business. I actually wanted to bring up the yellow and purple Ford Bronco. That was your first first big build?
Yep.
And what did you do to that? I mean, you don't have to give me the full rundown. You can just give me the high note.
It was the Bronco. I built it the first time. It was on the cover of four-wheel drive action magazine, 4WD Action. My wife posed with it. Took it to a car show. It didn't win a trophy, so I brought it back, stripped it down to the bare frame, and rebuilt everything. took it to its first car show. It won Best of Show. Did that for a few years. That's what got me recognized by Ford and Mazda. I've worked with both of them before. Everything that was – that Bronco was the start of Obsession Racing. By the time it was done, it had a full tube chassis, 2.5-ton axles on it. It was a mini monster truck is what it was.
Was it – and was this was that kind of your plan going into it, or did that just kind of what evolved from it when you started building?
That all kind of evolved from it.
Kind of it was telling you what it wanted to be.
Exactly. You know, I had a bunch of friends. We all had show trucks, and, you know, it was who could outdo who. We actually used my Bronco in our wedding. My best man drove it, and my wife and I were in the back with the top off.
That's pretty cool. That's one way to go.
It's actually, it sits in a private collection back in Dearborn, Michigan right now.
Really?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
How
many cars have you built that are in private collections? Cars or trucks?
That's the only one that's in a private collection. The rest of them have all gone to somebody that continued showing them or doing something with them, you know, magazine articles, that kind of stuff. They've always grown and always kept going from there.
What's the favorite car or truck you've ever built? What's your favorite one?
I'd have to say the Bronco, because even to this day, I kind of miss it.
I thought you might be judging by how you knew exactly where it was. I would imagine that the nostalgia, because that not only was that your first, you know, build, but it also must have been a really great part of your life, you know what I mean? So the nostalgia of something like that must hold on to you, you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was like I said, I bought it when I was 16, had it, did all the stuff with it, and when we sold it to buy our first house. So, I mean, not only was it a car, we the monster truck has already become part of it, the deal now, and now I sell about 2 years into the monster truck, 3 years into the monster truck, I sell the Bronco and I buy my first house with it. You know, and enough land to have the monster truck, the shop, everything on my own property.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize that all of that was right on your own property like that.
Yeah, if I walk to the south of the property, I go to the race shop. If I walk to the north of the property, I go to the t-shirt shop.
That's pretty cool. And so then, Eric, I have a couple questions for you now, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up with your dad kind of into this? I mean, I feel like this is a lot of kids, you know, dream is to grow up in a monster truck garage, you know?
Nightmare dream.
Yeah, it was definitely a little different. You know, I'd be at school and, like, my friends at school would say, oh, my dad has a monster truck. And then their dad would show up in their lifted truck. That doesn't look like my dad, but okay. But yeah, it was definitely different. I mean, and even a lot of our friends that we've known in the industry look up. Like I've kind of grown up with some of the big stars of Monster Jam and Monster Trucks, and I just look at them as regular people, and a lot of other people see them as these big deals. You know what I mean? So it's definitely a different experience growing up in it for sure.
It is always a weird feeling kind of when, you know, because for you, it's just like your day-to-day life. I mean, to a lesser extent, I have a similar thing with just like working on trucks in general, where people are like, oh, wow, that's so cool. That's so interesting. And you're like, you think to yourself and you're like, oh, yeah, I guess it kind of is, huh? You know, like you don't think about it. It's just kind of like your normal thing. So you don't really think about it much.
Definitely.
did you want to do, did you want to be, go into the family business from the time you were a kid, or was it something that grew on you over time?
I would say grew on me over time. But I mean, I started when I started on 50 dirt bikes racing, and I went from there basically up to 250, and then right now I do some on and off stuff with my 450. But my background was racing, so if I can make a little bit of money doing it, I might as well go for it.
Hell yeah, I love that attitude. So you started off with motocross.
Yeah, that's what I initially started with, and then I did motocross, and then we got a trophy cart, which is basically like a souped-up go-kart with quite a
suspension.
Bit of suspension and a roll cage. So I practiced crashing that a couple of times before I did the monster truck.
Probably a smart move. I feel like it's a lot less expensive probably to crash one of those.
Right.
True.
So were you competitive with motocross, or was it just something you were kind of doing?
Oh yeah, if I got second place, I was pissed. Something had to be wrong if I was getting second place.
So you've always been a highly competitive person then?
Oh yeah, I mean even
extremely.
it depends on everything. I mean, I'm really competitive. Even just like all my friends, we go like to the go-kart track and race, or even do like dirt bikes or mountain bikes. So anything I do, I'm pretty competitive in.
Do you ever get like really weird about competition where like, because I do this sometimes where you're like, you know, you go to a restaurant with your buddy and you're like, there's no way I'm going to let him finish this burger before me.
Yeah, actually a funny story. Me and my, one of my cousins, there's a Mexican restaurant by us, and it's called the El Matador Burrito. It's the biggest one they make. And it's like the burrito literally hangs off both sides of the plate, and me and him almost killed ourselves trying to eat it.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Me and my brother a little while ago actually did that. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Takis Hot Chip Challenge.
I've never heard of that, though.
It's like this chip. It's like the hottest chip you can, like, it's made with the, like, Carolina Reapers or whatever. It was fucking awful. I'm like, I'm not even a person who, I don't even like hot food. Like, I'm like, you know, Tabasco is a little too spicy for me. I don't really like that kind of thing. Dude, I don't know what possessed me to do this. I fucking took this chip, and I literally thought I was going to die. It was the worst. And it didn't even taste good. Like, I expected it to taste like a Dorito. It tasted like a mummified foot. It was awful. But, like, again, I wasn't going to let myself lose, though. That's
right. You can't do that.
I definitely won, even though I just hated it.
No matter how bad the next couple days were, huh?
And they were bad, let me tell you.
Lots of ice cream.
Cool. So you've been in it for 10 years. Sorry. Do you handle – so you're the – primary driver of Obsessed, right?
Yeah.
And are you the primary mechanic, and do you kind of handle everything, or do you, are you just focused more on the driving side?
No, we do. I mean, we kind of share pretty equally work on them, but I mean, I do more of the just maintenance on them, and then like when we go to pull a motor or something, we'll both usually do it.
I would imagine that pulling, how big are the motors that go into those things?
575 is the average motor, cubic inch.
Jeez. I would imagine it would take two people to work on it then.
No, actually, the other day, which was funny because, or interesting, let me rephrase that. with our YouTube channel, it's Obsession Race Team, we do a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff on it and whatnot, and I wanted to film my truck. We had the motor sitting on the floor, and the motor that was in it was just old. It needed to come out. And I wanted to film it to get some, you know, YouTube footage. I go walking out to the shop. I had a bunch of stuff to do in the office, getting ready. We were booking some shows and whatnot, and just, you know, some of the office work that I was helping my wife out with. And I guess Eric went out probably, you know, 7:30 or so, and I got out there about 11:30 noon. Old motor sitting on the floor, the new motor's going in already. I was like, dang, kid.
Well, you taught him well.
I hope so.
So pretty much you guys do everything. So you guys run the business, you both drive, you're both mechanics. I mean, it seems like you guys are probably pretty busy with this.
Yeah, we're usually, our average year is about 42 events a year.
When you say an event, what do you mean?
Weekend.
Okay, so you mean like a race, or like an actual monster truck event where you're competing against other monster trucks?
Yep, performing.
Okay. And what, this is actually something I'm really interested in just because I'm a weirdo, but what other things are you, or how are you generating income? Like, do you win? Do you get money from winning? Do you get money from, you know what I mean? Like, how
well,
are you guys generating
money?
Well, there's
a couple ways. Before we even leave the shop, we're contracted to know how much we're going to get paid to show up.
And this is at events?
Yes.
Okay.
Then on top of that, depending on what event, some events give you bonus money for winning on top of your contracted money. Or you have your novelties. That's why we have the T-shirt shop, Top Notch Tees. When, as I was getting older and needed to do less driving and more less monster truck driving, because when I started, the things weren't as good as what they are now. So I do have some back problems. My back cannot take every single weekend like Eric's does. Because of that, we built the T-shirt shop, and with the T-shirt shop, the reason we did a T-shirt shop is, like I said, with the printed circuit board shop, we had to silk screen the image onto the circuit board, so I knew how to do it. With the monster trucks, we were selling so much novelty, it was only a good choice to, let's do a T-shirt shop. I can supply all the novelty for the race team. Plus, I could, you know, I know all the other race teams that need novelty, and then that's what allowed us to do the Obsessed Wear clothing line for Eric on top of that. So, I mean, it was just a win-win situation all the way around.
Yeah, it does. It seems like a very natural kind of fit into the business model already.
Exactly. If you don't think about how much novelty we sell, it seems really strange. But when you think about the novelty, as you mentioned before, the sunglasses. The sunglasses are part of to add to the line of novelty just to get that much more going.
And these are Eric's sunglasses put out by Reason.
Yeah. They have quite a few selection of them, and then they just released the signature series of basically like my truck and my colors.
That's awesome. Everybody go buy a pair right now.
Obsessedwear.com.
How do you get that kind of deal? Did they approach you? Did you approach them? I mean, you've obviously kind of rubbed elbows with some big companies. You were, you know, dealt with Ford. You dealt with Mazda. How do you kind of find yourself in those situations? Are you reaching out to them? Are they reaching out to you?
A little of both. Back in the day when, you know, before the 06, 07 crash, you know, we were averaging decent money in sponsorships from companies. And when we were doing that, there was so much going on that just everything kept adding. You know, everything was adding on to this, adding on to that. And the networking, because you're sponsored by Ford Motor Company and they want you to go to a farm show in Tulare, California, which is 5 hours north of me, 5.5 hours north of me. And you're like, well, I got to go, you know, to do it. But you end up meeting somebody else, and then they want something else. And all of a sudden, I mean, the network just keeps going. And, you know, almost 30 years of, well, actually, my first show with the Bronco was 88. You know, so all those years of doing car shows and meeting people and, you know, doing stuff. I mean, to give you an idea, Dick Cepec's no longer a company, but when it was Dick Cepec or Four Wheel Parts were the big off-road stores. You know, they were in all the magazines to order parts from, do mail order, that kind of stuff. Tom, which is Dick's son, Dick had already passed away, but Tom, his son, his middle son had a pilot's license and they had a Learjet. They used to fly my wife to Vegas every year for SEMA.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, so it was just so much. You know, I always tell people I would never wish my lifestyle on anybody because most people would be divorced, not talking to family. You know, I mean, just a little of everything because of the workload and everything else. I mean, you're in a family business. You know how hard that is. Now magnify it because you're all over the United States trying to make that money.
Right. And I think another thing to point out, too, is it's not like you can just fly everywhere. You have to cart this massive fucking truck around behind you.
Exactly. So once we're done doing all that, putting trucks together, you know, it's amazing. You know, but the flip side of it is, and Eric's got to see a lot of this, the things we've got to do and the people we've met and the places we've gone. The opportunities we've had, because we're on the West Coast, 9 times out of 10, if you see a monster truck on a TV show, commercial or something like that, it's one of ours.
Oh, that's cool.
I think we've done some 45, 50 commercials and movies.
Jeez.
You know,
that's gotta be kind of surreal to like see your, you know, vehicle on a movie.
Well, Eric did. The last biggest one I think was probably America's Got Talent with Simon.
Yeah. Simon Cowell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you drove him around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, was he criticizing and driving the whole time?
No, he's actually completely different. That's what you would think. He was super cool, super nice, asked a bunch of questions.
He was telling the TV cameras to wait while he talked to Eric, and then they'd film later.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, another super cool person we got to meet was Eric and I went to the Disney Ranch, which is a studio about 2 hours from us.
Yep.
To do a Toby Keith video. When we got there, Toby Keith was there. And came over, looked at the trucks, thought they were super cool. It was getting to be dark. We were filming actually the next day, but we went there the day early to set up. And, you know, when I was getting introduced to him, I told him, I go, dude, you got me in the doghouse. And go, how's that? I go, my wife's a huge fan, and I'm meeting you, and she's not. He told his assistant, get his name and number, and what's the closest concert. Make sure his wife has backstage passes to meet me.
That's awesome.
I never heard nothing. Never heard nothing. I thought, well, he was just being nice. The day before the concert, I got a phone call that said, 3 tickets for you, Jill, and Eric. Backstage passes and everything are sitting at will call waiting for you.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was super, super cool. I've met a lot of singers. House MD, I was on that show. I had him in the truck with me.
Oh my God, I've seen that episode. I love House.
Yeah. Well, that was my truck. Met Sylvester Stallone. Tons and tons of rap singers.
Is this just an availability thing? Like, is it just because you guys happen to be, you know, in California, or is it just, Is this what you guys are out searching for?
We're searching for it, and it's because our location. One of the cool things is before we met Toby Keith, you know, I took my wife to a concert, and this is back when Live Nation owned Monster Jam.
Yep.
So I took my pass and took my wife backstage. She got to meet Blake Shelton. So it's called taking advantage of everything you have.
I'm a big believer in the theory that you should always, you know, it's easier to ask forgiveness than permission. So I appreciate that. I like that lifestyle.
So I mean, like I said, I wouldn't wish my life on anybody with what I've had to go through, but I would not trade my life for what I've got to do for anything.
For sure. It sounds like you're living a very exciting life. And it's cool that you guys get to, like, you know, it's one thing to be in a family business. Like, you know, there's family businesses that are like, you know, a general store, or like, you know, plumbing. But, like, you guys get to do, like, a really cool family business. You know what I mean? Like, not everybody gets to do that. Not everybody gets to not only work with their family, but also really love what they do.
Why don't you ask Eric, when we have to drive all day, all night to the next event, how cool that is.
I'm sure that that's not overly great.
When we're tag teaming from Houston home, because we have 20 hours to make it.
Eric, what is it like... you know, because obviously I know this from experience because I, you know, work with my own dad. What's it like? Obviously, you're following in your father's footsteps. There's no real other way to put it. But at the same time, you're trying to make a name for yourself. And not only are you trying, but I would say you're succeeding. You know what I mean? You're your own person and you're doing your own things. What's that feel like? And is it something you think about, or is it just kind of something that is what it is, and you just kind of let it fly?
I don't know if you – I would say I'd really think about it. I think I'd more look back on it, like if we're watching, like, one of our good friends does a lot of the editing for us on our YouTube. So we'll see, like, some, like, old footage or some, like, on TV and stuff like that. So you look back on it, and then you realize that you're at least somewhat popular.
But what's it like – because obviously your dad was really big in the industry already. What's it like coming into an industry where he's already kind of a you know, for lack of a better word, a star, and you're trying to kind of break into that same industry? Obviously you're following him in, but it's up to you to kind of, you know, live up to that expectation, you know?
Right. I mean, I grew up knowing a lot of the people in the industry, so that kind of helped a lot. And, like I said, I don't like getting second place that much. So I guess there's a little bit of pressure to do good. But, I think it was in a way a lot of pressure, but also in another way, I've been in the industry since basically I was born, so I kind of already knew what to expect in a way.
It sounds like your dad is your number one fan, too.
He does things I could only dream of. I'd like to say I taught him, but he surpassed me years ago. I mean, go back 4 or 5 years, he used to ask me advice. Now it's, hey, Eric, how do I hit this?
Do you guys ever compete against each other?
Oh, yeah, he loses.
When the truck breaks.
Well, that's because your mechanic's out on the track. So you do have to compete against each other. Is it, when you're competing, I know in some sports, I don't know if this is true in monster trucks, but when you guys are competing as a team, are you competing individually, or are you working as a team to try and, you know, win together?
Individually.
Okay. So it's not, I'm can't even think. I was thinking of, like, cyclists, how sometimes they're on a team, but really the team is more about just getting one of them to the – it's not like that. You guys are both going as hard as you can to try and beat everybody.
Yeah, especially, like, when you come out, you know, let's say we do qualifying for, you know, how you're going to set up your bracket.
Yep.
If you end up seeing each other in the first round, it's like game on, you know, because that's really hard because you know, you can look at it and go, okay, I could do better here, but he could do better here. It's like, nope, every man for themselves. Let's see what's going to happen.
And it is kind of fun. Like, you'll get some of, like, your really good friends that, I mean, you get to know and stuff like that. So, like, if I'm racing my dad, or, like, for example, I have, like, a friend with Donald or, like, Titan or Tyler with Double Trouble. They, when you race them, you want to do everything you can not to lose, just so you can talk trash to them.
Of course. You can't lose to your friends. That's
right.
Rule number one.
Lose to anybody but a friend.
But so then after the race is over, are you guys working together to try and get both? I don't know how much work goes on between races, but are you guys both kind of working together to get the trucks ready for the next go? Or do you guys have individual teams that you work with after that?
Isn't it beer and moonshine then?
I don't know. Well, you tell me.
Well, once we make sure the trucks are ready for the next event, yeah.
You probably have to have a little bit of beer and moonshine to crawl into one of those things.
It calms the nerves.
Eric, what was the first time you climbed into one of the trucks? Do you remember? And drove. What was it? What was your first time driving?
My first time driving, I was actually 9 years old. I mean, so basically ever since then, that's, like I said, how I grew up in it. I kind of got the feel for it ever since then. So now it's like walking pretty much.
Jeez, you must have been a tall 9-year-old.
Pillows, lots of pillows.
Is it something that you were encouraging, Rick, or is it something that he just kind of picked up naturally?
Obviously, I'd love to see. Well, he actually started driving, I think, even before that. He would pull the truck in and out of the trailer after we detired it. I think you were probably 7 when you started doing that. You were pretty young. You know, and everybody said, you're crazy. I can't believe you let your kid do that. I'm like, he does it better than most people I've seen do it. You know, I mean, and that's what people don't understand. When I say he's grown up around the sport, I mean, I have pictures. I got a picture of him and Dennis Anderson. Eric was 3 months old, and Dennis, I got a picture of him and Dennis. Then, fast forward 21 years, I got a picture of him beating Dennis in freestyle.
Who's Dennis Anderson?
He's the original Gravedigger.
The original Gravedigger. What was that?
One thing about our sport, you have the icons, but as Eric is a second-generation driver, Dennis's sons, Adam and Ryan, are second generations. Last year, it came down to Eric set the fastest track time in Anaheim Stadium's history, beat Max D's by over a second. Beat Max D in the semifinals, went to the final round of racing against Adam and Gravedigger. Adam's crew chief, Woos, looked over at me and said, because I'm on radio with Eric, and said, tell Eric good luck. And when Eric beat Adam, Woos was the first person to congratulate me. And then over the radio, Adam told Woos, tell Eric congratulations.
That's awesome.
You know, I mean, it's that cool.
It seems like one of those things where you guys would, you know, as a community, you would have to be close. I mean, there's only so many people that you can relate to who actually do this. You know what I mean?
Definitely. And with this kind of community, you'll find that we have friends. I mean, we have good friends throughout the United States, all over the place. And we stay in contact with them, even when we're not racing. You know, we'll call each other, see how it's going. And we look forward to the next time we're going to be with some of them, you know, just to hang out. And, you know, everybody has their own little, say, niche, so to speak. You know what I mean? And like Eric was talking about Donald, it's a good friend of ours. There's a couple people back east that, you know, I mean, when we've been back there, just have done gone out of their way to show what good people they are, to help, you know, while you're away from home. Just like there's at any given time when a tour is coming through Southern California, you never know how many trucks can be in our shop. They need to come and work on something or something like that. And it's just a kind of an open door policy with 90%, maybe 99% of all the drivers.
Well, it's not any fun either to go out and race against people who aren't at their best. You know what I mean? So working together to put everybody at their best keeps the competition fun too.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, it, you know, I competed in different sports throughout my life, and it's never, you know, it's never fun if it's not a real competition, you know?
Yep.
So I'm assuming that for someone like you guys where, you know, I mean, how many monster trucks are there actually on the circuit right now?
Well, it depends what circuit. So, for instance, like Monster Jam owns 60 trucks of their own.
Oh, wow.
They own all the Gravediggers, the Monster Mutts, the Maxis, the Superhero Trucks. Those are all owned by Monster Jam.
So does Monster Jam own Gravedigger, the brand? Like,
yep.
Really? So I didn't know that. So they bought out, like, the whole brand of Gravedigger. So anytime you see, like, Gravedigger, that's actually Monster Jam who's putting all that on.
Yes.
Weird. I had no clue.
Gravedigger, Maxi, Monster Mutts.
Monster Mutts?
Yeah, they own all of them.
Oh, jeez. My son loves El Toro Loco. That's his favorite.
They own that.
Ah, those bastards.
So, yeah. But they're probably, you know, they do some really cool tracks, you know, and their drivers are super cool. But like at a stadium event, they'll have six to eight of their trucks and 6 to 8 independents at any given stadium course.
Right. So not to get too bogged down in this, but I'm just curious when they have their own trucks. So do they staff like the team and drivers and the mechanics and all that?
They all fly in and out, and a truck driver picks it up and takes it to the next event.
Wow, that must be a lot of hauling to do for 60 trucks.
It is.
Jeez, that must be a crowded parking lot.
Yep.
What kind of so we've talked a little bit about traveling. I know that you have to break the monster trucks down and then rebuild them when you get there. How long does that process take?
I would say it takes about 45 minutes to put tires on both trucks.
That's it?
Yeah.
Really? I'm not going to lie, I'm a little disappointed in that answer.
Well, if you're a beginner, I guess it takes 3 hours. How's that?
Well, it'll probably take me 6, but I understand what you're saying. So it's a pretty quick – it makes sense that it would probably be a pretty streamlined thing.
Well, you're set up for it too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you're not set up. It's no different than a truck comes in for, you know, a minor body work or something. You probably can switch a fender on the truck faster than you can fiberglass the fender.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's true.
It's what you're set up for, you know, and that's what makes it nice. And like this last tour we were on for Monster Jam, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 6.
Yeah.
There was 6 haulers. And we all have living quarters on the hauler. So we go event to event and stay in the parking lots when we were out on the road. Barbecue. We all bought electric scooters, and that's what we cruised around on. And we'd barbecue and have a good time. And, you know, that's just the way it is.
That's awesome. So it's like it's almost like a tour, you know?
It sounds like,
I don't know if you guys know what the Highland Games is. Oh, it's similar. It's a similar, like, kind of setup where they all travel together and then they compete. But they all, like, the competitions, they're not the word. I'm not sure what the term I'm looking for here. Like, the competition, like, they're all just very close and stuff because it's a small group of people and you all travel together.
Yeah, so we're carnies. Just say it.
Okay. All right, you guys are carnies.
We just own our shit.
What is the preparation like for when you're going to be going out? Is it, again, you guys must have be old hat at this now, so it's probably not much, huh? You guys probably have everything ready to go all the time.
Pretty much. Basically, it takes about a day. If nothing's broken on the trucks, it takes a day to prep them and get them ready for the next weekend.
All right. That's not too bad. And what are you guys doing with your other time in the shop?
Well, Eric, you can tell them about your F-100.
I have a project truck that I've had since high school that barely gets worked on every couple of days. But it's basically a 1968 F-100 that we completely cut the floor out. It's a complete tube chassis and has long travel on it. And it's basically just a trophy truck to drive around the street to go get groceries.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. I bet you get pulled over around here driving something like that. I'm sure you get pulled over out there for driving around in that, too.
Well, it's not done yet, so I'm not sure.
Not because it's illegal, just because of the style of driving. I'm sure that you have to do in a trophy truck. But I just mean, like, what is your kind of day-to-day look like, you know, between when you wake up and go to bed? What does your normal day look like?
I think it all kind of depends on what the weekend was we had, when our next event is, if we have a couple days off. Because as everything's going on, Eric spends almost every day in the race shop. And then I go in, help him in the morning and in the evening, and during the rest of the day, I'm in the t-shirt shop running that. We're, you know, pumping out t-shirts for customers and whatnot. So it's probably a 200-foot walk from shop to shop, maybe 150. So it makes it easy. So I can be at both places, watching over both places and helping out at both places while work's being done.
How many people do you guys have working for you?
Never enough.
Do you?
And if we're slow, too many.
Oh, I know that feeling. Do you guys have, like, obviously what you guys do is extremely physical and, you know, you guys are athletes. Do you guys have some sort of, like, training regimen that you follow or anything to keep you in shape for this, or is it just kind of doing it keeps you in shape for it?
Dirt bike riding. It kind of keeps you in shape, and I mean, just working on the monster truck, everything's so heavy, you don't realize how many muscles and what muscles you're using just to even work on.
I would imagine.
Well, you know what it's like to work on a big truck.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's heavy.
Everything. It's like everything, and even the tools you have to use just to work on it are heavy.
Exactly.
You know, I think about that all the time when I go, you know, grab my sledgehammer, and I'm like, boy, I bet you that should have been working on motorcycles. Should have been working on cars. Why did I pick this? Why did I pick trucks? But I know why I picked trucks. It's so I don't have to crawl around on the ground.
There's something about a decked out rig that you just can't top.
There's really, I mean, I think monster trucks really fall in that category of, like, you know, a lot of people, when you're not standing in front of a monster truck, it's easy to say, like, you know, how stupid or whatever. You know, there's a lot of things, a lot of people pretend like they don't understand what's unbelievably cool about a monster truck. When you're standing in front of a monster truck, or like when you go to a competition, you know, and you see them going, you even just standing there and listening to it running on idle, it's like, it's very obvious that it's one of the coolest things that you can do. It's like this, it's like very, I don't know, it speaks to like that primal side of you, you know what I mean? Big engines and, you know, flying through the air. I mean, how much do these trucks weigh?
Mine's 12.5.
With you in it.
Yeah.
I like how Eric knows right off the top of his head, and Rick's just like, I have no idea. Some number.
Mine's 12 something.
Eric's got it down to the ounce. And how high do they normally fly when you're taking them off jumps and that kind of thing?
I've got pictures of almost 40 feet from the tire to the ground on Eric.
Jesus Christ, really?
Yep.
40 feet up?
The second level of Anaheim Stadium. You can
what
see the banner
Christ?
Underneath them.
What the hell is that like? Oh, my God. I can't even imagine. And then you come down?
And it stays in one piece.
Jesus Christ. It's when you're watching it, it doesn't look like that. But now that you say that out loud, it's like, wow, that's something. What's that like being that high up in the air, Eric?
Well, the longer you're in the air, the worse it is.
Because, like, I know that obviously you have your hood and stuff in front of you. Can you even tell how, like, that you're really up there? I mean, that's a four-story building.
I mean, what you kind of gauge it off is once you basically hit the ramp or left the ground, and, like, how many seconds you're in the air is kind of how you gauge it, because you're in, like, a full containment seat, and your neck's basically, it's in a Hans device, which is, like, strapped back to the back of the seat kind of in a way, or your shoulders. And you can't really see down very well, so you just pretty much gauge it off how many seconds you're in the air.
Just on the off chance, I mean, nobody's ever seen a monster truck show. Usually there's, like obstacles and jumps and stuff. How do you see those coming? Because it seems like you're up in the air, and then if you can't really move your neck around and stuff, how are you kind of judging the landscape that you're in, and how are you maneuvering around? Because, you know, you can tell watching it that it's not something that is just happening. Like, it's obviously very careful handling. It obviously takes a lot of skill. You know what I mean?
Believe it or not, like, when you're racing, like, a round-to-round race, you come out of the corner, and you know how far the jump is from the corner, how far out it is, how deep it is from the corner, that kind of stuff. And a lot of times, you don't see the jump. You just know where it's at, and you go for it. I mean, and that's not to say it sounds scary. You know what I mean? Like, if there's a line of cars or a dirt jump, whatever, you can see the end of it, but you can't see the takeoff of it.
Gotcha.
So you drift to where you know it's at, and then you kind of line up at the other side. You know, it's very important to go around the stadium and look for markers on the stadium that's up high.
Okay.
So you don't have to look at the track.
That makes sense. And how long does it take you to get used to that? Because it feels like you must have to just kind of have a lot of trust in your own memory of how the stadium is set up. You know what I mean?
I think your first crash is when you say, well, I misjudged that.
Because I know just driving around the shop, you know, sometimes we have the mirrors off a truck. Sometimes, you know, you can't always see. But, I mean, I could drive around the shop blindfolded at this point. You know, I've done it so many times. But I feel like having to move all over the place and having to trust your memory every new place you go, how do you kind of study those things when you show up?
I think a lot of it is in the truck, there's actually a lot of, like, you have a feel for everything. So it's like I could look at an angle on a ramp, and depending on the angle, I already automatically know how far or high I'm going to go.
Oh, cool. So it's just like repetition and just knowing, huh?
Reading it, yeah, knowing how to read it and practice of reading and, you know, that kind of stuff.
How much driving are you guys doing, like, day-to-day? Do you get to take – I would imagine it would probably be pretty expensive to just take this thing out for fun, you know what I mean?
They only get taken out if they're getting paid.
Really? So you never drive them just as practice or for training or anything like that? It's only when they're getting paid?
Yep.
Huh. That must make it do you do anything else to prepare yourself for that, or is it just you do it often enough that you know what's going on?
They actually came out with, not too long ago, a simulator game for like a PC, basically.
Yeah.
That we just started using, so that actually helps a little bit, too.
And can you configure that to kind of be set up like your truck?
Pretty close.
Yeah, it's actually pretty, for a computer game, it's actually pretty accurate. I was really surprised when I first started using it.
It just doesn't hurt.
What's the name of it?
The name of it's called Rigs of Rods.
All right, I'm going to have to look into getting that for the shop.
You got to get the full simulator, pedals, steering wheel, whole nine yards.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm going to come out and try yours first, and then if I like it, I'll pick it up. I'll race Eric. I get competitive, too.
There you go.
Well, guys, that's pretty much all the questions I have for you today. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about, or is there any questions, you know, that you wish I had asked?
I think you got a lot of it.
I think you got pretty much all of it. You know, I think just a quick summary is, you know, like I said, I've been in this business a long time. I do see a bright future with what Eric does. I mean, he does the backflips, the nose wheelies. I think the best thing I could tell the listeners is to actually go and look at the YouTube channel Obsession Race Team and see what Eric makes these trucks do, because until you see it, you cannot understand what is going on inside that truck. And, you know, we do cameras inside the truck, and we got one video of him rolling over when he took a corner a little too tight. you know, but I mean, it shows how fast that dirt comes up when you misjudge.
I would definitely suggest everybody go and take a look at the whole YouTube channel. Is really cool. Your guys' Instagram channel is really cool. And just, you know, I think all of that, just everything you guys are doing is so awesome. I'm curious. Actually, I do have one more question. I'm curious, what are you guys still pushing the envelope? You know what I mean? Is there still changes and stuff, or is things pretty much leveled out at this point and things are staying the same?
No. I my opinion from watching, you know, because the shows I do are the small fair shows and whatnot. Because of my age and whatnot, I can't do Monster Jam. My body can't take it anymore.
30 is too old to do Monster Jam?
No, 30 years.
Oh!
I'm already gray. Of course, I wasn't until Eric started driving like he drives now. So it's, you know, my body just can't take it. Eric, watching Eric and seeing what he does and what he can do. Like, you can watch drivers, and when they get into trouble, all they do is map the gas and hope for the best. And they'll be up on one side, and they'll usually flip the opposite way because they panic. You know, they do the panic rev and all that kind of stuff. But one thing I can say about Eric, and this is not because he's my kid, this is coming from other drivers, is that when Eric gets into a situation, he drives out of it. He doesn't panic. He doesn't, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying he hasn't crashed, because he has. That's, if you're pushing the envelope, you're going to crash. But like when he's up on two wheels, you can hear it, rah, 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 you know, and drive out of it, versus you hear somebody else just mad for everything it has. And, you know, they save, if they're up on the right two wheels, they save it, but they whip it over so hard it flips to the left. You know, and that, you know, the old saying, whiskey throttle, there it is right there.
And as far as like the building and stuff, is that all still changing? Like, are there new innovations and new adaptations coming to the trucks themselves?
We back halved Eric's in December to make it better.
Yeah,
really?
I think we're on, like, as it evolves or whatever, we're on, like, the third generation of design of, like, a monster truck, basically. Third or fourth.
Yeah.
Basically
fourth.
And you feel like that's still going?
I'm sure there's room for improvement, so.
Eric, do you plan on doing this for the rest of your life? Is there something else you plan on doing, or is there anything else you plan on pursuing?
Right, there's I mean, I still want to do this for as long as I can, but we also have my clothing line Obsessed Wear, and we're growing that right now and getting our t-shirt shop up and running, so we're both going to look into going to that eventually.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on here, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Everybody, do me a favor, go over and like Obsession Racing on Instagram. Go check out Obsession Gear. Go check out the new sunglasses. Go check out their YouTube. They're just an awesome family, an awesome team. I've really enjoyed following them and you know, talking to them. And don't be afraid to reach out because they're some of the nicest people I've ever met. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys. I hope you have a wonderful night.
You too.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.